Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Well, we are in off the first weekend in December that had a lot of intriguing action from London to Arizona. We're ready to recap it on the Fight Freaks Unite Recap Podcast. I am the somewhat capable host, TJ Reeves. He is still playing a little hurt with the boys, not feeling great, but he's hanging in there. Dan Rayfield, our insider, his Fight Freaks Unite Substack. You also read him as our content partner on BigFightWeekend.com as well. All right, my friend, I know, as I said, got a little cough, still playing a little hurt, but we got some good boxing. We were not going to let this weekend go by and not recap. We got some good results. Fury victorious, which we expected. Daniel Dubois in big trouble at the beginning of the fight and wins. Details on that. As expected, Chocolatito and Estrada deliver another tremendous fight with a lot of action and a lot of landed shots. So we had to be in here to recap this. Good to be with you, and we appreciate your time because I know not only are you under the weather, but the Giants made you sick against the Washington football team, Commanders, or whatever they're calling themselves this week. By it's a tie. It's a tie on Sunday evening.
That's like a draw in boxing. It just sucks.
Yeah, nobody wins on that. The good news for my Buccaneers, they didn't play Sunday, so they did not lose. However, they are playing Monday Night Football as we release the podcast. At home with the Saints, big game for them. There's a little football talk, but we're here for
it
the
feels
boxing
like a
talk.
All right.
A tie can feel like a loss, but sometimes a tie, though, can get you into the postseason or something if you just get a tie. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for finding us, however you did so. Social media link, Dan promoting it through his Substack. We promote it through BigFightWeekend.com and all the social media channels, etc. Again, a reminder that we come your way with a preview into the weekend, usually out Friday morning. By midday Friday, and then we come back with a recap podcast. You get two of them all the time as benchmarks. Recap podcast usually ready late Sunday night or Monday morning, and plenty to talk about. And again, they want to follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, because then we don't have to tell you. We don't have to remind you. Instead, you're going to get what? Dan,
you tell them.
I'll tell them this time. So they get a light, they get a vibrate, they get a ding. They get a banner. They get something that says new podcast, Dan Rayfield's greatest hits.
You get a bell.
You get a bell. You get some kind of notification that there's a new one there whenever we're off and running. And that is what we're doing here. Okay. Let's begin with the WBC heavyweight champ, the lineal heavyweight champ, Tyson Fury, as expected, one big. I've got a couple of comments to make, including some strong comments about why this was allowed to continue to go on. But I want you to recap it first. He gets the stoppage by TKO over Derek Chisora. Your thoughts, main event, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Saturday night. It was cold, as expected, outdoor venue, December, hello. But he looked good. And I saw it on social media in your article, it was target practice in a lot of ways in this. But elaborate, your thoughts on Fury's latest title defense win.
When that fight was over, I felt like I needed to take a shower because I was so disgusted by it. I hated everything about that fight. I hated it when it was announced and made. I said so. It was like just 60,000 people in a worldwide viewing audience watching Tyson Fury try to take a man's life. I felt like that was one of the worst beatings I've ever seen. I know how Howard Cosell felt watching Larry Holmes deliver a beating to Randall Tex Cobb. That caused Howard Cosell, after decades of calling boxing for ABC, to basically quit the sport.
Yes,
because he was so disgusted by that mismatch.
Are you ready for my impersonation? Because
no.
I'm actually good at Cosell. I may not be good at all of them, but his line that night, as Larry Holmes continued to jab and pound behind the jab, Tex Cobb, round after round, with him not even firing back. This referee is an advertisement for the abolition of the very sport he's participating in. is what Cosell uttered, and I still crack up at that almost 40 years later. We are dating ourselves. But in a lot of ways, this is kind of the same thing. I'm joining in with you. When the sixth round became the seventh round, became the eighth round, and Fury's landing 15, 20 hard shots around, what are we doing, Dan Rayfield?
And by the way, yeah, may I say that that Tyson Fury-Derek Chisora fight was almost 40 years to the day since Larry Holmes beat the living shit out of Tex Scott.
Wow. How about that for nostalgia?
Look, and this is not a negative towards Derek Chisora. He's a warrior, man. The guy took a beating. Mm-hmm. You know, he hung in there. He didn't go down. He stayed on his feet the entire time. He gave the best effort he could at his 38 years of age with a long career behind him. Plenty of big shots that he's taken through the years. So nothing but my respect to Derek Chisora for the heart and the will, because he could have packed it in any time. But fuck his corner. They tried to get this man killed. They were like, oh, we're doing all right. I mean, they didn't give a shit if Derek Chisora lived or died. I'm not trying to be like melodramatic. I really mean that. Like, I just don't think they gave a shit if this man lived or died, because that fight should have been stopped several times. I mean, the fight should have never been made in the first place, but okay, fine. It was made. Chisora and Fury are friends. He gave him the payday. Mm-hmm. He sure didn't act like his friend, like they said they wouldn't. But that was just everything that's wrong about boxing. I mean, I don't care if there was a big crowd there. The fight should never have happened. It went exactly, if not worse, than anybody could have expected. And he just went in there and just beat the shit out of him.
Now,
and
I will say,
like, nobody seemed to care about it until the last moment.
I will say, in like the third and the fourth round, Chisora landed a couple of overhand rights. He showed some hope, was still aggressive. But clearly by the sixth round, this is what you're saying, and I'm 1,000% on board with you. By the sixth round and the seventh round, he's just taking punishment, and there is no haymaker punch that's going to change it. And Andre Ward even said, finally, like in the eighth round, he's like, he's already taken his best shot, Chisora's best shot. I'm paraphrasing. What do we need to see with him with his eyes swollen, almost swollen shut, eighth round, ninth round? What are we doing?
Blood coming out of his mouth.
Yeah, enough.
Look, you get enough to a certain point in these fights, and it's not just this. I've seen this before, although not necessarily the abject mismatch going in, where certain fights cross a line from being a competitive athletic competition to just public violence, of just beating up somebody in the public. And it's no longer competition. It's no longer entertaining. It's just a guy beating the shit out of another guy, and they're going to get paid for it. I mean, and this was a terrible display. I do hope that Derek Chisora decides to retire. You know, he's had a good career. He's been a popular figure. He's had some great fights, but dude, enough is enough, man. Yeah. You're going to die in the ring if you keep at this.
And that was brain damage type stuff. I mean, we're not overselling here. This is not hyperbole. The eighth, ninth, and tenth round, I mean, you're looking at, this is what brain damage comes from.
This is a life-altering kind of, beating. Yeah, yeah. And you know what? And as I'm watching him get his ass kicked, I'm thinking about Yerba Sinelli from a couple of weeks ago, a few weeks ago up in Minneapolis against David Morrell. Not the same situation, but how long are you going to let a beating go on? Now, the referee finally stopped it. And to the credit of the referee, to some degree, it didn't get stopped because he got dropped or there was some huge punch. It was just like, it was just another combination in the middle of the ring. And it's like, enough is enough already. The guy, I think he got as sick and tired of watching Derek Chisora get beat up as I did, and probably many others, because that fight should have been stopped. And I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking it. I was writing it on Twitter at the time, in real time as it was occurring. It was just it was pathetic. I mean, so Fury gets his title defense, he gets his second fight into the year, gets the whatever rust may have been on, and hopefully next will be Usyk.
Okay, so let's get to that. We don't know if that is going to be next for sure, but certainly it was entertaining after the fight where Usyk was at ringside along with Joe Joyce. They both came up to the ring apron, and Fury goes into his World Wrestling Entertainment promo mode, calling them both out. Staring down Usyk on the PA mic for the whole crowd to hear. This is by design to help hype things. And I love the different metaphors and adjectives. He's going, "You rabbit, you run, you rabbit," and going on and on about it. Okay. Then came something interesting where he revealed, I have an elbow injury. And that could complicate matters here, where he said, just like I had to have my left elbow operated on after the Wilder fight last October, I need to have my elbow operated on. He told Mark Kriegel of ESPN that in the ring, and then he elaborated after the fight again that it needs surgery. Okay, factor that in. We all want to see Fury Usyk, but how much concern do you have? Does anybody that understands this, that if there's elbow surgery, that's likely going to mean Usyk fights somebody else while Fury goes on the mend? Or what do you think?
I don't think that's happening. I mean, if you need surgery, so be it. He said he also had a right hand problem. He had hurt it by hitting Derek Chisora's big head so many times during the course of the fight. But it seemed to me that the elbow was a little bit more serious because he felt like that needed surgery. Now, we don't know for sure if he needs surgery. He's not a doctor. Granted, it's his body. He's had the surgery on the other elbow before, so he probably knows what it feels like. But even that being the case, that's from what he said and what it occurred in the last surgery. You're talking to 6 to 8 weeks. So if he has a medical exam and he has surgery sometime in the next couple of weeks, it should still be okay enough for him to be back in the ring, you know, come the early spring at the soonest, which is when sort of the fight was being contemplated anyway with Usyk, probably in that March to April timeframe. Perhaps they'll push it back to April, maybe the beginning of May, but it's not going to be, at least doesn't seem like, unless they find some more damage, that it's anything more than a couple of months, and then he can still have a full training camp and get this big fight on. Hopefully that will take place. I mean, he did offer up the prospect of fighting a Joe Joyce if they couldn't make the deal. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they'll make a deal. I see no roadblocks to making it. I think the sanctioning bodies will all stand down. As Bob Arum has said many times, which is Tyson Fury's co-promoter, there's an excellent relationship in terms of business between Bob and Top Rank with Usyk's manager, Egas Klimas. Bob has a relationship with Usyk as well. There's no promotional issues. There's no TV issues. It's just, what's the biggest amount of money we can get for a site, and let's get it on.
Now, you had concern that the fact that the IBF wants Filip Hrgović to get a mandatory shot might stand in the way of, if Usyk gets stripped of a title, then it's not what we want. How concerned are you that, because I believe Usyk will go ahead and just fight Fury anyway. It's the biggest payday, but
I think that, I mean, look, whatever happens in terms of, do they make the fight? I do think that at this stage, if the two sides elect to fight each other, that the sanctioning bodies are going to allow this fight to take place for the four belts. They would be stupid if they didn't, because it's against their own benefit. I mean, typically the sanctioning bodies do things for their own good, understandably, and this would be a big, big mega fight. There's no reason for it not to take place. And if there's an issue, I'm sure they can work something out. It wouldn't be the first time there'd be somebody to step aside. What happens when you got to pay the piper is, if they are allowed to do this fight for all four belts, is what happens on Monday morning after that fight takes place. That's when all the letters start flying and orders get made for mandatories and guys give up titles or guys get stripped. There's no chance, probably almost slim and none, that if the fight happens, that the winner can still maintain the four belts. And frankly, at that point, you know, the mission has been accomplished anyway. But his health of his elbow and his hand obviously is important. But other than that, it seems like they can make this in fairly short order. And as big fights go, not a lot of drama compared to other big fights.
To get it made, to find a way to get it made, same promotion as you mentioned, or promoters that are familiar with each other, go and work it out and figure it out. All right, we progress. And actually, let's go backwards to the co-feature fight on that card. That saw Daniel Dubois defend his secondary WBA heavyweight championship. Again, Usyk has got the super, correct me, is it the super belt, the world belt, whatever they consider it by the WBA?
Fury's the real WBA super champion, and Usyk, Dubois the, Usyk, you know, the regular champion. I refer to them, any of the WBA regular champions, if you will, I call them secondary title holders. He's like the junior varsity. I mean, it's important because it gives him certain stature. It gives him certain privileges in terms of, there's a purse bid in terms of getting a larger percentage. And it's not a knock at any of the athletes that hold those second tier titles. I don't blame them, but I remember a conversation I had not that long ago, last year, when they were, when the WBA was going through their process of eliminating interim titles and and trying to get down to the two titles. I was talking to Rolly Romero at the time, who was, I believe, the WBA's interim champion at that time at 135 pounds or 130, whatever it was. And he was like, I don't even care. I just, you know, to me, it was a stepping stone to get to the big belt. And I think Dubois and anybody else that holds either the secondary title or at one point held an interim title understands that these are a vehicle to get to the point where you can fight for the real championships.
All right. So Dubois in the ring.
He showed, by the way, that he's junior varsity last
night. All right. So Dubois with a lot to risk against a South African, Kevin Lorena, who's primarily been a cruiserweight, although he's fought some heavyweights recently. And Lorena pops him with a straight left hand that caught him kind of on the top of the forehead. And suddenly Dubois is loosey-goosey in the ring without legs. And it became crazy and dramatic as the first round unfolded. And it became bizarre too, Dan Rayfield. And I was in communication with you as well on Dubois went down on his own without a punch being thrown, not once, but twice as that round went on. Lorena did not even throw a punch and he went down. When he went down the first time without the punch being thrown, he looked at his corner very clearly on the live broadcast and shook his head no, like, I don't know what's wrong. He later admitted his leg was hurting or numb. He couldn't feel it and couldn't walk. All right, you pick it up from there because it very nearly could have been a stoppage in the first round.
It seemed like the first knockdown was a punch. And when he got hit with the punch and he went to the canvas, on the way down, he maybe tweaked his ankle or tweaked his knee, and that caused a problem. So when he went down the second time, it seemed like that was the issue, that the knee or the leg or whatever was going on with his ankle. I'm still not really clear. Top Rank's post-fight release said it was a knee problem. I've not heard an interview with Dubois saying so. In any event, some kind of leg issue on the second.
Let me interject. Because we're both covering this and we help each other out. He told BT Sport in the post-fight interview with Joe Anker, I believe is how you say her name. He said, I couldn't feel my leg. I didn't know what I did to my knee. That's essentially what he said.
Okay.
And he goes, so, I mean, he obviously had trouble standing up. Pick it up. Go ahead.
And so that was the second knockdown. The third knockdown, I did think there was a punch of some type, but the
this
knee
is where
was
I
really
come back at you. No, there's no
okay.
punch. There's no but, punch at the time that he goes down. He's just, he kind of got hit. He kind of wobbles back a little bit. He puts his guard back up and then he goes down. And it's
but
like,
the main thing here is his problem started because he took a clean shot from Kevin Lorena and messed up his leg on the way down, which we've seen. I mean, this, again, I'm going to date myself. I remember, you know, years ago, you know, Derek Jefferson, the one-time heavyweight contender, going down and breaking his ankle, essentially, against Oleg Maskiev. The knockdown, you know, was damaging, but it was really when he fell, the leg hurt him. Mm-hmm. Michael Grant, another heavyweight contender that fought Lennox Lewis for the title. When he came back, he had a fight where, you know, he got knocked down, but it wasn't so much the knockdown that messed him up. It was because he hurt the leg going down. I mean, that happens, you know, when you fall and you twist your knee in a weird way or your ankle in a weird way, that can come back to haunt you. So, you know, Dubois was able to come back. Now, the referee or the timekeeper, it's like everybody was trying to help this guy out because it seemed like they cut the round short. They rang the bell with about 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 seconds left. So that's big when you're almost done in the first round.
I didn't even know that. You're breaking news to me on the Fight Freak.
But that's not Dubois' fault. So he came back in the second round and was clobbering Lorena late. It was almost like Lorena was afraid to get the knockout. He put the handcuffs on and decided not to punch back.
Right.
Because to have Daniel Dubois down three times, possibly compromised with a bad pin, and you can't get the stoppage, there's a problem there. And when the fight finally was ended at the end of the first, at the end of the second round, I understand there was a big uppercut in there that hurt him. But the round, the bell was ringing. The referee absolutely should have allowed him to have the 1 minute rest period before waving off. But in that situation, on that promotion, on that card, you know, everything is in Dubois' favor. As I said, you know, I hope Daniel Dubois sends off a very nice Christmas card to the referee, Howard Foster.
Yes.
Who, by the way, not his first time being involved in this type of fight where there's a controversial stoppage.
You knew where I was going with that. He's been in a couple of different messes even recently.
I'm just sick and tired of the bullshit type like this. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
And it's starting to piss me off.
Well, I can tell. You're a little cantankerous. That's good. You're not feeling good. But in this case, I thought it was fascinating audio. Okay, so can we're just banging on everybody.
But by the way, let's also not let ESPN off the hook.
I'm coming right there. Let me do it, and then you follow up.
Okay, go for it, man.
So they had pre-planned, and I understand how TV production works, and so does you. So do you. They had pre-planned to interview Tyson Fury on the ESPN portion of the feed, which, again, BT Sport is the main controller of the feed. ESPN's the secondary. They're running their own broadcast with their own announcers, but they're kind of at the mercy of BT Sport. So ESPN also has a producer there. We're getting behind the scenes now in the broadcasting, and they have the ability to cut to something else if they want. And they had lined up to talk to Tyson Fury after the bell rang at the end of the first round with Mark Kriegel back in the dressing room. So they're promoting that while Dubois is flopping around on the ring. They're promoting they're going to still talk to Tyson Fury. Bell rings. And we try to go to the interview with Fury, which you can't hear.
There's no audio.
And conveniently, the audio, good for us, is still left up on Dubois' corner because I went back and listened, and you can hear what's being said. But that whole thing was a technical train wreck. First of all, Joe Tessitore does a fantastic job most of the time calling boxing, but he was apparently oblivious to maybe it's a knee injury. And why has he gone down twice without a punch even being thrown? Let's at least address he just went down again without a punch being thrown. What's going on?
Here's the other thing.
So go ahead. Yes.
I've been around live television production for over 20 years. I worked at ESPN for a long time.
Yep.
For 15 years, I worked at ESPN. I did a lot of live television for ESPN. If you have a pre-planned interview with Tyson Fury between rounds one and two, and the guy's been down three times, you know what? Two things can happen. Either you bag the interview, because what the hell is Tyson Fury going to say we haven't heard all week?
Right.
But I understand you're in the dressing room. It's before the heavyweight championship fight. I get it. Tape the interview.
Amen.
And show it a couple of minutes later. Nothing's going to change. They didn't show a single replay of the knockdowns between rounds, which is unforgivable. And on top of that, the interview that was all hype, again, not the fault of the announcers, not Mark Kriegel's fault. There was no audio. So it was a complete fucking train wreck, as you said. It was a horrible situation. They fucked up by doing the interview and not showing the replays. When they did the interview, there was no audio, and we still never saw the replays. And it was very confusing because, as you said, we see my boy Kriegel talking to Fury in the dressing room. We can't hear what anybody's saying. And meanwhile, I'm hearing on my screen whatever's chirping and going on in Daniel Dubois' corner, and I'm still not seeing a replay. And then the round starts, and nobody fucking mentions that, oh, by the way, he might have fucked up his knee.
Well said on summing it up. And he got good advice, actually, because you could tell he was saying through his mouth guard, he said, I hurt my leg. And he's pointing at his leg. I went back, I listened, I turned it up. He said, I hurt my leg. I hurt my leg. And so then the corner says, whoever that is, says, I don't want you throwing wide punches. I want you to only throw straight punches, and I want you to stay away. In other words, let's get your leg back under you, which he did in the second round. And finally, in the third round, he ended the fight. So inadvertently, accidentally, we got to hear the good corner audio that we wanted because of all of that we just said. And Dubois ends up getting the win. All right, so let's put a bow on this if we can. He gets the win. What does this mean now? I think you have the same concern because Joe Joyce beat this guy, fractured his eye orbital, and beat him. This guy, Kevin Lorena, dropped him and had him wobbled. All right, so what's the gauge? What's the short-term prospects and future for Daniel Dubois? What do you think?
When he was coming up, he looked like he was going to be something spectacular. And he's still a very good boxer. He's got good power. He's got good personality. He's got good background. He's in good shape. And it just feels like when he's in there with an A-level guy, he's going to get blown out because he's not going to be able to take the heat. You know, Joe Joyce beat him down, bludgeoned him, hurt him bad, broke him up. And I don't know if he's ever going to be the same from that. I mean, the guys he's fought since then have not exactly been murderers. Row. Bogdan Dinu, journeyman, you know, Joe Cusimano, complete, you know, nothing.
Mismatch.
Trevor Bryan was the mandatory. Trevor Bryan was a manufactured 22-0, you know, with a fake belt. And he went and he destroyed him. And now he comes back against Lorena, who I said to you on our Bet US show was competent. I didn't think it was a complete and total blowout, which it wasn't. Somebody made, and I don't remember if it was somebody on Twitter, made the comment that it feels like after seeing him not being able to take the shots with Joyce or with Lorena, that maybe we're looking at a Frank Bruno 2.0, a guy with a great body, great boxing ability, tremendous power, lovable type of guy, but it's going to lose the big one because he can't take the heat. You know, that was Frank Bruno's reputation. Now, Frank Bruno did win a heavyweight title briefly. Of course, he got destroyed in his biggest fights against Tyson. And hopefully Dubois can heal up the knee and come back stronger and improve.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Yep. And we don't know, again, was it a serious injury or whatever? I don't know. We'll wait for the further updates on that. And will it delay things on him? All right. So that kind of puts a bow on that card, the Queensberry Top Rank co-promoted card in London with the two heavyweights. All right. So let's move on now on the Fight Freaks Unite recap to the main event of the Matchroom Boxing DAZN show. Once again, it delivered Juan Francisco Estrada, Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. They battled to another 12-round. I'll describe it as hotly contested. I thought Chocolatito was winning the fight early, but I thought Estrada came on.
You thought Estrada was winning the fight early.
I thought Chocolatito, through the first three or four rounds, had really won a couple of the rounds. Yes. I thought, well, let's put it this way. I thought it was at least like 2-2. I didn't think it was a shutout. I didn't think it was one-sided. Okay. All right.
Well, I think
clearly,
I had
Estrada came on in the middle of the fight. Go ahead. Go ahead with your analysis.
I mean, the judges, and I don't even disagree with them, they all had Estrada, you know, ahead after five rounds. Two judges, I think, had given him the first five rounds. One judge had given him four of the first five rounds. I gave him four of the first five rounds.
You're saying is, as usual, I'm clueless, but continue.
No, it's not clueless. They were competitive. You know, it just felt like Estrada was doing more of the work. He was coming forward. He was landing more shots. He was, you know, Chocolatito was backing up. And Chocolatito, I've been watching for many years. He's notoriously a slow starter. It's what cost him probably in the first fight against Sarungvisai, which I still feel like he got robbed in. It cost him, obviously, in the second fight against Estrada, even though I thought he won that fight, as many did. And it definitely cost him in the fight on Saturday. You know, he gets going later on in the fight. Look, it was another terrific fight. These guys are made for each other. They're both going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. Roman Gonzalez is, you know, one of the greatest small weight fighters in the history of boxing. And even though he's now got two losses and one win against Estrada, you know, he will be remembered as the greater fighter overall, even though he may not be, you know, he may be lesser in terms of the head-to-head record. Again, nothing against Estrada. In my opinion, Chocolatito was two wins, zero losses, and one draw against Estrada, because I thought Saturday's fight was a draw. I thought he won the first fight. No one even argues that. The second fight, I thought he definitely won. And it's sort of like a Canelo Triple G situation. You know, Canelo Alvarez officially is two wins, no losses, and a draw against Triple G. And there's a lot of people who feel like Triple G, the reality is that he should be, you know, possibly two wins and one loss, maybe one win, one loss, one draw, that type of thing. But certainly not, you know, 0-2-1, that he should have had one of those W's in there, either the first or second fight. And Chocolatito is in a similar situation with Estrada, but they put on another terrific fight. I don't think it lived up to the pre-fight talk where the two guys were saying it's going to be the best fight of the trilogy. It's going to be the fight of the year, because it's not the fight of the year and it's not the best fight of the trilogy. But it was a high class fight between two great fighters. They fought for the junior bantamweight supremacy. You know, Estrada maintains that lineal title based on the victory before. He also picks up the vacant WBC title, which he had that had been stripped or vacated or whatever. So he's got a belt again, still the Ring Magazine champion. They talked about the possibility of a fourth fight. Estrada seemed game for it. Chocolatito was not, he was not against it. He's like, how much are they going to pay me? They talked to the family, think about possibly retiring. Matchroom's promoter, Eddie Hearn, who's involved with both fighters, certainly was not opposed to a fourth fight, but he seems to have other ideas. He'd like to match Estrada possibly with Julio Cesar Martinez, the flyweight champion who won his bout on the undercard, who had lost his previous fight in a non-title fight, fighting at junior bantamweight against Roman Gonzalez. And there's also the possibility of maybe against the Bam Rodriguez down the road if he can collect the flyweight title from the WBO, which, remember, he vacated one of the titles in the heavier weight class. But the point is, there's other fights out there for Estrada. And if Roman Gonzalez decides to continue his career, there's going to be other opportunities also. You know, Nonito Donaire was there at the fight. He would like to fight for one of the titles at junior bantamweight, as he has told me and others. As great of a fighter as Donaire is, champion at flyweight, champion at bantamweight, junior featherweight, and featherweight, he had an interim title for a minute at junior bantamweight, but it's the one that he never got a full title. And he said he can make that weight, and he would like to go down and pick up the belt that he never won before and win a title in yet another weight class. So that is certainly a possibility. You know, we'll have to see. But the main thing is there's still good fights out there for these guys if they want to keep going.
And Chocolatito showed a lot of heart. He's older. He had taken a lot of punishment. He was still firing back in the late rounds. This is the opposite.
Oh, he closed strong, TJ.
Sure. And this is the opposite of what we were lamenting. I'll use that word, with Chisora having no chance and doing nothing but taking punishment. Chocolatito was wailing right back, scoring to the body, and winning a couple of rounds late in the fight that made
Not
it a very
a
close fight.
He won a lot of the late rounds. I mean, in the ninth round was probably his biggest round of the fight. You know, again, if you look at CompuBox, he threw 100 punches in that round. For a guy 35 years old, that little weight class, that's – and by the way, he landed like 30 of them. So he was landing punches, and, you know, in the last round, the 12th round, which, you know, was very close round, probably could have gone either way, they really were going back and forth toe-to-toe. If one of those judges that gave the last two rounds to Estrada had flipped it and made it a Chocolatito round, if I looked at the cards accurately, we would have had a majority draw. Majority decision. So it was that kind of close fight. And I have seen, no one's out there like saying it's super controversial, but there's a lot of folks that I've seen or spoke to or texted with, close fight either for Roman, close fight either for Estrada, or a lot of folks that also had it a draw. I mean, it was that kind of fight. And a terrific fight.
All right. And give me a little more on the undercard. You mentioned Julio Cesar Martinez. Give me a little more on the undercard there, and then we'll get to a little news and get you out of here as well. On the recap on this for this weekend. What else from the undercard on the Matchroom show?
Well, as far as TJ, as you mentioned about Julio Cesar Martinez, you know, he had, as I mentioned just a moment ago, he lost pretty one-sided in a junior bantamweight fight, a non-title fight to Roman Gonzalez back in March. That was when he filled in for Estrada because Estrada had to withdraw from the third fight because of COVID, the same way that Chocolatito had to do in the fall because he had COVID. In any event, Martinez lost pretty one-sided, but he went back down to fly. He was supposed to have the rematch with McWilliams Arroyo after their wild no contest that had taken place at the end of 2021. A couple weeks ago, Arroyo dropped out because of a neck or a back injury. And so in came the Spanish Olympian, Samuel Carmona, 8-0, good amateur background, very confident. And on short notice, you know, they were able to keep his title defense alive. And it started out pretty well, where Carmona did great in the first half of the fight, first several rounds, was outboxing Martinez and really kind of making him look foolish, to be honest with you. But then something happened where it appeared like Carmona hurt his hand, and he then decided he wasn't going to fight anymore. Now, he just decided to run. It was like watching the worst of Guillermo Rigondeaux or the worst of Arislandi Lara. He was literally running around the ring, and I'm really not sure why you're running if you got a hurt hand. You still have another hand you can use. You know, professional fighters are schooled in both hands, and he was a top amateur, so it's not like he doesn't know how to use the other hand. In any event, he ran so much, you know, that Martinez was able to win most of those late rounds and ended up winning a majority decision to keep the title. But it was an absolutely horrible fight, not because of Martinez, but because of all the running that Carmona did. But Martinez wins, he moves on. I mean, I guess they'll probably still order the Arroyo rematch because technically that's a mandatory, given that it had been ordered before because he's the champion and Arroyo is the interim title holder of the WBC. But as I said, Eddie Hearn is in the mindset of possibly matching Martinez if he wants to go back up to the junior bantamweight division and take on Juan Francisco Estrada. You know, he could also be there as a future opponent for Bam Rodriguez as well. So there's still business to be done. Martinez and Estrada would probably be a pretty big deal in Mexico. You know, two WBC champions from, you know, different weight classes fighting each other. That was the co-feature on the card. And then in terms of the rest of the show, you know, it was interesting because you had the excellent prospect, Diego Pacheco, who's now 17-0, who is a guy that signed with Eddie Hearn from day one, young guy, signed when he was still a teenager. Now he's just barely 20 years old, 20 or 21 years old. I mean, just a really good looking prospect from Los Angeles. He's 21 now. And he just looked, you know, he wasn't fighting like a super top guy, Adrian Luna, Ricardo Adrian Luna, but he just bombed him out of there in two rounds. It was very impressive the way he took care of his business. You know, he's had a really good year. I think a lot of people will look at him as a, if not the prospect of the year, certainly in the top few. I think he's in the top few in terms of if you're making your prospect of the year list, which I've been doing for, you know, over 20 years. So he's a fine prospect in a weight class where, you know, he's going to make some noise in the not too distant future. Yeah, it's sort of an upset. Christopher Rosales, who's a former title holder, he defeated Joselito Velasquez, the undefeated Olympian. That was an upset. That was a terrific fight. That was the opening TV fight. And in the what they call before the bell, these are fights that are not on the main card. The other prospects that Matchroom has in their stable, Americans anyway, they all look pretty good. Mainly, I'm talking about Mark Castro from Fresno, who moved to 9-0, put on a terrific display in an 8-round decision win over a Michael Lopez. He's a lightweight, just great conditioning, really settling down into the professional ranks. I think a couple of fights ago, I really noticed that he's really sort of shed the amateur way he fights. He's much more poised, much more relaxed, picks his shots, not so wild. And then the middleweight, Austin Williams, he won basically close to a shutout, like 9-1 on the scorecards in his fight on that part of the card against Simon Madsen. You know, now he's 13-0. Again, an up-and-coming middleweight, exciting, good personality. And, you know, these are guys to keep an eye on. I mean, they're the undercard fights now. Down the road, you know, you got to figure they're going to move on to the main card and someday co-feature. And eventually, if they keep winning, we'll see them in headlining fights.
Like all of that, love your insight as part of the Fight Freaks Unite recap podcast. All right, remaining couple of moments. There were a couple of news items and fight announcements. I know Bob Arum was talking about a couple of them, including the Josh Taylor-Jack Catterall fight that we believed was going to happen, but probably February is now maybe on the move. What else? What else do we have from anything else Saturday to Sunday as we come off the weekend?
Well, as far as that goes, when he was in the UK helping promote the Tyson Fury-Derek Chisora event, you know, he did speak and say that this Catterall and Taylor rematch for Josh Taylor's WBO junior welterweight title, remember, he was undisputed, but it vacated or was stripped because he wanted to go for this rematch, given the controversy from their fight that took place earlier in the year. Anyway, that fight was penciled in for February 4th in Glasgow, Taylor's home turf. Now it's going to get moved to March. There was some kind of scheduling issue that is causing an issue there, so it's going to get put off by another month. And, you know, the only negative part about that is it's just another month added on to what is going to have been a very long layoff for these two guys. They'll be over a year, I guess, by the time they get back in the ring. So the fight's still going to happen, I guess, but they're just going to have to situate it on a different date. And as far as dates go, one thing I reported about, remember a couple of weeks ago, you had Caleb Plant and David Benavidez, the super middleweights. Caleb Plant, the former title holder that was beaten by Canelo in the undisputed fight. You have David Benavidez, who is now, he's a two-time WBC title holder, has now the WBC's interim title. In any event, everybody knows Plant and Benavidez have been talking a lot of shit for a while. They announced on their social media that they had signed contracts for a fight in the early part of next year. And so that's going to happen. But now I am told that the date for that penciled in is March 18th, Las Vegas, is being planned as a Showtime pay-per-view fight. That's a little disappointing that that'll be on pay-per-view. That shows you where we've gone in this business, that fight, which is a good fight. I'm not knocking the fight, but that would now become like basically like a $75 pay-per-view. Is extraordinarily disappointing in a moment in time where PBC is lining up a number of pay-per-view fights, because besides Plant against Benavidez, you've got the January 7th Tank Davis pay-per-view fight. You got the probability, if everything goes okay, of the April pay-per-view fight between him and Ryan Garcia. There's going to be a Deontay Wilder pay-per-view fight. Most likely, if they can finalize the fight against Andy Ruiz, that's another pay-per-view. Errol Spence is going to be back in action in the first half of the year, probably against Keith Thurman. That's another pay-per-view.
You love it when I interject some humor. There was an Errol Spence signing on Saturday. He flipped the coin in the Big 12 championship football game, TCU and Kansas State. That ended up being a great game with Kansas State upsetting TCU. But we did see the truth. We did see Errol Spence flip the coin there. So there is proof of life, an Errol Spence signing. Now, can we get him in the ring, please? Continue on.
We're going to get him in the ring, but it's going to be on a pay-per-view basis. And that's, you know, that's really disappointing. I just mentioned to you like five or six fights that are all being targeted as PBC related show pay-per-view fights. Most of them, I guess, will be involved with Showtime. You know, remains to be seen what Fox's involvement is going to be next year, given the end of their Fox PBC contract. And they really didn't do shit this year anyway, except show a few fights on preliminary cards, you know, during their pay-per-view. There wasn't a single standalone Fox or Fox Sports 1 boxing event this year. They finished those up in December of last year. This year, they were simply a clearinghouse for pay-per-view events. And again, to help promote those pay-per-view events in the hour or 2 hours prior to the pay-per-view commencing, they might show a couple of undercard preliminary bouts, you know, either on Fox or FS1. And what happens next year is still not clear. So Showtime is going to be asking, along with PBC, for a lot of our money next year.
Well, and so I was just going to, and you just tagged it right there at the end. My understanding was that the deal is up with Fox. The option year that got picked up is over. So we don't know if Fox is still even going to be involved. And so would PBC now shop this? A lot of people believe, because follow the bouncing ball of TV and how it works, Showtime is under the Paramount umbrella. And so that is also CBS. That's all the same thing. Would they expand the deal, Premier Boxing Champions, with more than just Showtime under the CBS Paramount umbrella? I don't know. I'm not reporting that.
Right.
And I'm not clear on whether the Fox deal still is going to exist in some form for pay-per-view. But clearly, as you said, they don't have any interest any longer in standalone programming like Saturday nights in the summer on Fox, right, or FS1 regular shows, or they'd be doing it. They don't have any interest in doing that at this point.
The bottom line is, whether it's on Fox pay-per-view or Showtime pay-per-view, the more marquee PBC fights are going to be on pay-per-view. Now, that doesn't mean that Showtime still can't put on some good fights. Obviously, they're going to do fights like, you know, Jeremiah Ponce against Sabriel Matias, let's say, for the vacant junior welterweight titles. They're going to do a Alberto Pueyo against Gary Antoine Russell for, you know, his junior welterweight WBA title. They're going to do fights like Charlo versus Tim Zhu in the undisputed junior middleweight title fight, which is supposed to be January 28th. Now, those are not bad fights, but I'm not knocking. Those are solid fights. And by the way, the fights I mentioned, other than the Charlo fight, it's not even known if they'll be on Showtime, or maybe they'll wind up on a pay-per-view undercard. But the point is, the fights that Showtime is talking about doing, it's not like they're bad fights or anything like that. It's just they're not of the star power level of why you buy a subscription to a premium network.
Agreed.
You know, if we're all of a sudden now, every Davis fight's going to be on pay-per-view, Spence is on pay-per-view, Wilder's on pay-per-view, and now we got Plant against Benavidez on pay-per-view, give me a fucking break.
All right, I think that's pretty good to end it on, unless you have anything else, Mighty One, because I know you've been playing hurt, and we've covered the recap of fights. We've covered a little news. I think we're good for the week. Again, it's a week that will end, and we'll be in the preview mode with Terrence Crawford back in the ring, speaking of pay-per-view, on a pay-per-view of his own in Omaha, Nebraska, in his latest title defense, not fighting Errol Spence. We'll talk more about that later in the week. Other than that, I think we're good. Dan Rayfield, good stuff off the weekend in the recap mode. We'll be reading you and keeping up with you on the Fight Freaks Unite Substack and BigFightWeekend.com. Thank you, sir.
Well, just so you know, it's not just Crawford back in action next week. We also got Teofimo Lopez back in action at the Garden on ESPN. Got Josh Warrington in his title defense against Luis Lopez on Saturday on DAZN. That's a pretty solid fight. You also have Michael Conlan in a fight on Saturday in Belfast. So you have Manny Pacquiao in his exhibition in South Korea. So we got plenty of stuff to talk about.
No doubt. In the preview mode, and we'll be writing about it and keeping up with it on BigFightWeekend.com. Thank you, Dan Rayfield. Good stuff. Hang in there. Feel
Thanks,
better.
Thanks, TJ. You bet.
And there we go. Once again, make sure you're following, subscribing, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, because you get the preview programming from the Big Fight Weekend preview heading into the weekend. And then you also get the recap, Fight Freaks Unite recap as well. We'll probably also on the podcast feed, by the way, put the Teofimo Lopez conversation that Dan had up on the podcast feed. You'll get that if you're following and subscribing. That'll be up midweek this week prior to the Takeover's return to Madison Square Garden this coming Saturday night.
It's the Take Back.
It's the Take Back now. It was the Takeover. The Take Back. Teofimo Lopez, and he says that to you in the interview. You'll hear all of that if you're following and subscribing to the podcast feed. For now, we're good on the Fight Freaks Unite recap. For Dan Rayfield, I'm TJ Reeves. Thank you for being with us.